one of the founders told me that, you know, the gutter talent program is their ride or die. That will always stick with me as like, okay, that's how I want our founders to feel. A difference with gutter is we're all operators. I'm meeting with the founders every week if we're working on a search, but sometimes communicating every day. We're in the office together. So we have some competitive advantages for the way that we work with our founders that is just very close. If a hire were made at a company that we didn't know about, it would be shocking.
What a value-packed episode this is going to be. I'm so excited for you guys. I find Richard to be a very kind human being, and I'm grateful I got the chance to sit down with him and talk about hiring and talent at Gutter Capital. I also ask Richard how his own career in talent has evolved over the years, his biggest learnings, how he got into venture capital, and finally, how he supports his portfolio founders today at Gutter Capital. It's hard to stay on topic when you find someone so interesting. I did try my best, though, to bring it back to platform, but there are just so many cool things that he keeps bringing up. I just blame him, right? I try to keep this episode under an hour, but jokes aside, it's honestly pretty incredible how committed and close Richard and his team are to their founders. I know that for a fact because I actually went out and spoke to two of their portfolio founders from the fund, John and Amer, who were very generous with their time and spoke to me in great detail about how the Gutter team goes out of their way to look out for their founders. It feels personal. It feels like they genuinely care. And honestly, after recording this episode, I kind of got reminded of why I started the podcast, which is to meet people like Richard who are doing all they can to not just help their startups get more traction, but really be there for them end of the day. And I'm so happy I get to share this with you. Enjoy. Richard, so happy to finally do this. The whole morning I was waiting to record this podcast. And you know, coming into this pod, I had the chance to speak to John and Amir, who you've worked with in the past, and they had nothing but good things to say about you. Literally, it was a 30-minute call for both, and I think they spent 28 minutes complimenting you and how fun it is to be working with you and to be having you in their circle over the last decade or so. And I left even more energized after learning about you from those calls, because it just went to show how much of a positive impact you've had, not just on people's professional lives in the recruitment space or the talent space, but also on the personal side of things, because it almost felt like they could count on you as a friend to really help them through those difficult times in the recruiting and talent space and just company building overall. So such an honor and pleasure to have you on. And I can't wait to dive into specifics today with you.
Well, that's very kind, Mash. And thank you for having me today. I'm excited for the conversation and very appreciative of Amer and John speaking with you.
Perfect. So before we dive in, Richard, why don't you give us a bit of an intro so that the audience is just as excited as I am today?
Great. Well, I'm Richard Hughes. I'm an operating partner at Gutter Capital. We're seed stage investors based in New York City. I'm actually calling you today from our office at 221 Canal. I've been in the talent space for the last 15 years in New York and love supporting founders and early stage companies with their recruiting.
And when I was reading about you, Richard, I think I realized you're the first person I've ever spoken to who spent quite practically their whole life in talent recruiting and connecting people with the right minds for their business and in their circles, et cetera. But my question is, why this specific space? Like, what drives you towards this so much? Like, what attracts you about talent and recruitment that you've committed so much of your life to this?
Yeah, it's been a fast 15 years, actually.
Okay.
I've been very fortunate to work with some great companies, work with some great brands, and frankly, just incredible people. Recruiting has given me the ability to work with all different types of functions, from product design to sales leaders to CEOs. And that's been an incredible experience. There's a few reasons why I've stuck with it. And it's certainly been a 15 years where I've grown a ton. And recruiting has offered me the space to continuously learn. I meet probably 300 to 400 people on a yearly basis. And these are like net new people, not from the existing relationships. And it's such a privilege to be able to learn more about their stories, the things that drive them, the biggest motivations that they have for their careers, and some of their biggest wins. So from that standpoint, the constantly learning part of recruiting is a real pleasure. It's also, frankly, as you can imagine, it's rewarding. I've had the privilege of connecting people with, I think, career-changing opportunities, in some cases, getting them the ability to make more compensation or get more leadership in a new position, find a new culture. So from that aspect, it's been incredibly rewarding. And then I think more recently in my career, the thing that has been a significant driver and motivator and a meaty part of what I do is working directly with founders. And I spent a year as a solopreneur, which we can get into. And that year really was such an experience that gave me a ton of appreciation for what a founder goes through. Like, I didn't have any employees and I still felt that roller coaster of, you know, how are my customers feeling? You know, when's the next piece of business going to come through the door? Am I delivering at the best of my abilities? And being able to work with founders at Gutter that are really tackling ambitious problems and supporting them with their talent strategies. One thing that I'll note with Gutter founders that makes it very special, and again, I'm sure I'll go into a lot more as we go, but one thing is that they all are extremely motivated to attract and retain and grow a top team. So talent is important to everybody that we work with here. And then learning about their ambitious goals and helping them fulfill that from a talent perspective is a true pleasure, and also one that keeps me coming back for more searches and more work.
Yeah. And I think when you make the right match, it's just like a big adrenaline rush or a dopamine hit, sorry.
Yeah.
And it just, the machine just keeps going, right?
I still get it. I still get butterflies when a decision needs to be made from an offer, you know, for someone that we're really excited about. I'm right there, you know, with the hiring manager feeling it. Which way is it going to go? What can we do to move it our way? You know, I still feel like when we get that person and I get to see them, you know, up close, work in the role that we had talked about for, in some case, months, and see them, you know, perform really well on a great team. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. When I spoke with John and Amir, what they mentioned, both of them mentioned actually, was that working with you on both sides, right? So on the hiring manager side, as well as, you know, them being a candidate that you introduced to the company that they're working at now, one thing that they really admired about you is that you add clarity. You help both sides really understand what they're looking for in their personal and professional lives, and really, will it be a good fit? And it's almost like you have a superpower for really reading a person and understanding and having that human-to-human connection with them, right? Which is, I think, a critical element when you're introducing them to a company that they could be spending 5 to 10 years of their lives in, right? Especially with an early-stage company, because it takes a while for results to show. And one thing I've realized as well when I was reading up on you, Richard, is that you're hiring across the spectrum. And over the last 15 years, you've hired for executive roles, managerial roles, and engineering, sales. One could say that you're almost a generalist matchmaker. Mm-hmm. And when I was speaking to, I believe it was John, is that he mentioned, you know what, Mash, it doesn't feel like, sure, like Richard helps with recruiting, but I wouldn't call him a recruiter. It just feels mm-hmm. like he just understands people very well and really just helps them understand whether or not this is a relationship that they're willing to commit themselves to for the following years, right? And I think that was a very impressive thing to hear. And so what I'm curious about, Richard, is how did you get involved in talent? Like, what was your entry point into this industry? Where did it all start? What's the inception?
Yeah, it actually started in an unlikely place. It started in Boise, Idaho. And I actually had moved to Boise, Idaho right after college because I had enrolled in a volunteer program, Jesuit Volunteer Corps Northwest. And my placement within that program was with a nonprofit called SHIP. And that was a supportive housing nonprofit working with people coming out of prison in most cases. But the common thread was they all had substance use disorder. So people at the time, this was 2009, so crystal meth was just kind of ravaging the, you know, middle America. And unfortunately, alcoholism was a big part of the program as well. And my role was an employment specialist. So my job was to work with this population and to help them get a job. So mm-hmm. it was everything from resume writing to putting together a cover letter to coaching people on how to answer really difficult questions, such as, do you have a felony? And I realized in that type of work, I could help these people make little changes to these skills that they already had, and it could help them land employment, which is the biggest thing to help with recidivism rates. So this wasn't easy work. You know, I wasn't successful getting employment for everyone I worked with, but again, like back to that rewarding thing, when it happened, it was a beautiful thing. I worked, you know, some of the people that I worked with there were incredibly bright, had a really difficult dealt hand to them in their lives. Some things were out of their control. And, you know, a lot of them were really trying to make an effort to better themselves and make their life different. And then in some cases, like I was working with people who were in their 40s, 50s, and they had never had a resume before in some case. And, you know, seeing that finished product with the person, you know, was really special. And I take a lot of those experiences with me. A lot of the things that I talked about in that year, actually like still talk about to this day, you know, the STAR method in interviewing, like situation, oh, yeah. That's a big unlock. And I'll still be in, you know, interviews for executives, and you kind of wish they just kind of followed the STAR method for the question.
That's funny.
And yeah, so that got me started. That was a year. And then I was off to the races. The unique thing about my background is that I've been an agency recruiter where you're working with different clients. I've been at a few venture-backed startups and been a part of, you know, those recruiting teams. I've been in venture before. I worked at another venture firm before Gutter. Mm-hmm. And I've also been on my own as a solopreneur. So kind of seen talent and recruiting from multiple angles.
Yeah. And I think that's also one of the things that make you a very interesting individual, Richard, because you've started your career, you know, volunteering to help folks, right? And through my conversations with others in your circle, what really always bubbled up to the top is even till this day, you're very purpose driven and you're not quote unquote matching people just for the sake of it. You're doing it because it's almost like you genuinely want them to succeed and you really want them to find a home in where and with whom they decide to work with in the near future and for the foreseeable future. And it's just very heartwarming to know that the inception of your interest in talent came from such a pure place. I think that's super unique. And one of the things that I wanted to ask you, Richard, is before, so I know that you worked in venture and then you were a founder and then you worked and you came back to venture. So what was your entry into the venture capital world like? Because I find that a lot of folks that I talk to in the platforms, the VC platform space, it's gorgeous. Like it's never the same story. It's almost never from a, gosh, I was an investment banker. It's always very interesting, super diverse. So what was your entry into the venture capital world like?
It was great. And it was something that I was seeking out. So while I was at Managed by Q, I loved recruiting. I was able to work on different functions within that business and continue to take more and more of the talent acquisition pie. So I actually wasn't brought in to lead the team, but I was actually brought in to handle a certain area of recruitment, a certain like business unit. I was helping to recruit for the marketplace team. But in being successful for that, I continued to take on more at Managed by Q. But I at first I didn't want to be a recruiting manager. I was a little hesitant. I wanted to continue working on searches. That was my passion. And the leadership at Q almost didn't know what to do with me to continue to grow me because I was, you know, working on the executive searches, was like a little bit unsure about management. So I was fortunate enough to get a mentor that Managed by Q had connected me with one of our investors, which was Homebrew. One of the top seed stage funds of all time. And Beth Shear is their partner who has an incredibly impressive talent background. She was at Google for years. She was at Salesforce for years. And I got to have a weekly with Beth for 2 years. And we would talk recruiting strategy. She would help, you know, me on really difficult searches, helped me navigate as we scaled, which I was, you know, hadn't seen before. And through that time, I wanted Beth's job. So as Q was successful, as we had an exit, when WeWork acquired us in April of 2019, I had helped build the team. I had solved our engineering recruiting problems. I had solved product design problems. I had helped hire a head of product. It was just a lot of things to figure out. So I had this success, and that I think made me a good fit for a venture role where I could take some of that experiences and offer that playbook to founders at Primary.
Interesting. And then, so you were a director of talent at Primary Venture Partners. I'm curious, what did you do there? Like, what was your day-to-day like, and how were you supporting the fund there, the portfolio companies there?
Yeah. The best part of working at Primary was working directly with the founders there and taking some of the playbook that I had learned at Managed by Q from being at a startup that had scaled and adopting those to some of the early stage companies. So a few of the key things that I helped implement with some of our companies, I'll share a few things. One of them I describe as the curve of excellence. And this is a recruiting concept that I've worked on for a few years. And it's the idea of what to expect in a recruiting process. So as a founder, you do a first interview with someone, you're like, I'm not exactly sure if this person is the one. And a lot of my work with those teams were to show them, well, we actually need to build a process. And what this process will look like, imagine as a chart. There's an x-axis, that is time, and y-axis is our ultimate belief in this person as a fit for the role. And, you know, early on in the chart, you know, hopefully they have like they're a little bit high on the y-axis, but with each step, you know, as we have some time, that person is increasing and really we're getting more conviction that they are right for the requirements that we have for the role, for the goals that we want to achieve, and they're a good match for our culture. So I worked with them. That actually curve of excellence also applies to the candidate experience because, you know, sometimes as someone applies to a job, they're like, of course, I would love to work at Gutter Capital. And hopefully what happens is, you know, as they meet more of the team at Gutter Capital, their interest continues to go up and they learn more about what it's like to work with the people. They learn more about what the mandate is. They learn more about the style, what the goals would be, how performance will be measured. And they're like, I'm in. And oh, and they're willing to pay me what I need to make. Like, that's like a great candidate experience. So it took us a little while to figure that out at Managed by Q, and working with some of the founders at Primary to help them with introductions to great people in the Primary network for their open roles. And then really doing some of that hands-on coaching to say, okay, this is like how you can unblock your top of funnel for your candidate flow. Like, this is how we could find more people. This is how to put in a great strategy to start approaching better diversity metrics in our recruiting processes. All those types of things I was able to work on in a little bit more detail directly with founders, which was great. The thing that I missed was not enough hands-on recruiting, not enough kind of process from, okay, I'm going to work with you from the beginning to uncovering the need, and then really working with the candidates through to the end. It was less of that work and a little bit more of coaching and network building, but ultimately for the purpose of hiring within the portfolio.
And I think to scratch that itch, you went on your own then and became a founder right after. So you got into the venture world and then you became a founder right after. And I was looking at some of the brands that you worked with when you were on your own, you know, Splendid Spoon, Bicky, Pattern Brands. Beautiful websites, by the way, for the audience. You go on their website, the colors are popping and you just don't want to leave the website. It's so beautiful. So I'm curious, how involved were you with these companies when you were on your own as a founder working with them? Just trying to understand, like, was it you were involved in their day-to-day, you finally got to be more hands-on? Like, what was that like?
Those are three great examples. I don't know if I earned the title of founder. I've been referring it more to solopreneur. It certainly was a year on my own where I started something, but it didn't come to full fruition and I never hired anyone. I was at a life crossroads where I was about to become a dad and I wasn't exactly sure about a firm that I wanted to build. So I I had an idea. I called it Ecotone Search. And an ecotone is a place where two ecosystems meet. So it's where a forest might meet a field, or, you know, a desert might meet a lake. And that's kind of where the most biodiversity happens. So I was thinking of it from like, well, I love recruiting for product. And that kind of product is kind of where sales and customers and operations all come together. Pattern Brands was a primary company. So it came through that network, working with Suze Dowling, who's the chief business officer. Suze is a fantastic people person outside of all the other amazing things that she does. She's a great interviewer. And where Pattern needed help was helping to shape some really key executive hires that they had in finance and supply chain. And that sounded really interesting to me. Plus working with Suze was a plus. So I took that role on. I thought of it as a retained recruiter, very much so that I was doing formal kickoffs on the position. I was helping them to shape the job description and the competencies. And then I was actually getting out there and getting the word out to all candidates and representing them through. Then with Splendid Spoon, that was one that came through my network, another that I had actually never heard of before, but I'm a big fan of Splendid Spoons now. We actually just had our second kid, and Splendid Spoon was in our fridge for weeks. The smoothies in particular, highly recommend.
Very
I met
cool.
Elise Densborn, who's the co-CEO there, and Elise, within a few minutes of talking with her, I knew I wanted to work with her in some capacity. So it became another situation where she had three critical roles, one of them being a head of people, one of them being supply chain, and another one being on marketing. And I was able to help her with those positions. I actually helped a friend get the people role because it was such a cool position. And then Vicky was one that came referred to me from my now partner, Dan Turan, who's the former CEO and founder of Managed by Q, where I had worked for years. And Vicky needed help top of funnel. They needed a sourcer. They needed someone who could beat the pavement. And I was willing to do it for customer success, for marketing, for product designer, for engineering. And so what Vicky was really helpful for was it helped to kind of create the role at Gutter, because Gutter wasn't totally official at that time. Dan had been investing with James Gettinger, our other partner at Gutter. They had invested in about 100 companies over the course of 5 years, Vicky being one of them. Dan was really, really hands-on in the early days, obviously helping to hire two co-founders. And then when Dan connected me with Vicky to help with these other searches, kind of the wheels started turning on what an operating partner role could be at Gutter.
And that's such a beautiful segue, Richard, because I was just going to ask you, you know, you're the first operating partner that I'm interviewing on the pod. So, and that's a great moment for both of us. And thanks for explaining the inception of the platform role and or the operating partner role at Gutter. But my question is, what's the key difference, man? Like, what's the difference between an operating partner and, let's say, a head of platform? Because I've spoken to head of platform folks in the past as well, and talent is something that they do help out with. So help me understand the difference here.
Yeah, I think part of it is an attitude difference. When I think of operating partner, I think of someone who's leaning forward in a function and is an expert in that space and is going to help the teams that the firm backs, like with that thing that they're really good at. So whether it's an operating partner in marketing, or like PR or recruiting, you know, that person is focused on that. But we're an early stage firm at Gutter Capital. We have two funds. I view my role very much a similar way that I would a startup head of talent. The business happens to be venture capital, which is a great position to be in. But my role consists of the main North Star is helping companies attract, assess, and retain great people. At the end of the day, that's the most important thing. Because we're a startup, I do 1,000 other things as it relates to the fund, as well as our office. We have a space, as I was mentioning earlier, and part of my job is this week it was finding a new waste hauler for the office. We have 30 people who work out of here. There's 9 companies, and they're actually Gutter portfolio companies.
All of them are Gutter?
Yeah. Which makes it really fun. People know where to find me when they need me. They know where my desk is. I'm here 5 days a week. And the operating partner role becomes not, you know, obviously the North Star is recruiting, but I'm also involved with strategy and direction for what we want to be at Gutter. My partners, Dan and James, as co-founders, general partners, leading investment decisions, they also will lean on me on other firm direction conversations that we're having, big decisions that need to be made. And that is a pleasure and a privilege to be in that seat.
The platform leads and head of platforms that I've spoken to in the past, they're extremely involved in the platform side of things. So they literally know everything about their founders.
Yeah.
However, when it comes to the grander firm direction, what kind of founders are we investing in? What does the next 5 to 10 years look like for the fund itself, not just the platform side? Typically, they're not as involved as what I'm hearing from you, Richard, where you're, you know, a part of the, it's only 3 people, you, Dan, and James. And side note, by the way, when I was speaking to Amir, was it John? They mentioned that talking to you guys is like a cheat code for fundraising because you guys just, A, know so many people and you guys have literally invested in by yourselves as well as through the fund in so many companies. You guys have seen so much, right? So I think it was just such a pleasing thing to hear because if I was a founder, I would want to be with a VC fund like you because we're literally in the same office. I can walk up to you, we can discuss, et cetera.
Yeah. If I was a founder, I would want Gutter to be the lead investor.
Right? Exactly.
So that's the kind of place you want to build that you can be really proud of. So yeah, that tracks.
It's such a beautiful fact to
listen
to.
Are you starting to think something, Mesh?
You know what? We'll talk offline. I'm in stealth mode right now. You know, I'm thinking. I live in Toronto. I can just like drive down to New York City and come back up. You know, it's not a problem at all.
We should talk because you know I could think of a few things for you.
You know somebody who knows somebody. That's the Gutter tagline. So, how have you seen the platform industry evolve over the last 5 years? I've spoken to a few leads in the past who've mentioned that by now it's pretty obvious that VC funds with platform teams have better returns than VC funds without. But you being in the industry and living this life every day, Richard, talk to me about how you're seeing this space evolve now and how it's been 5 years ago versus what it is today.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I would say that point of funds that have the platform teams having better results is a great thing. That's now common knowledge, which I think took some time to become common knowledge. I think as I shared about Beth Shear's role earlier, I think that was a rare move by Homebrew at the time to bring someone of Beth's caliber on. And now it's such an obvious thing. So my take on what's been the biggest change is the function is now more metrics driven and results oriented than I think it has historically been, because now investors are learning that this function is so valuable and they've brought it on. Now that they're thinking, okay, well, what are the levers that we can turn to make sure that we are measuring this properly and that it's actually changing the outcome of what we're doing? So I think the metrics, it's becoming more common for these platform teams to have like direct goals and probably a part of OKRs. Like at Gutter, we're big fans of doing quarterly OKRs. We do them with our teams that we back, and we're supporting them to assemble them for where they want to go. It's so important to look into the future and say, what is future me? You know, where do I want to be? And then working back from there with attainable goals. And the platform role is one that certainly that's becoming more and more important, because prior it was a little bit more nebulous. Like, what does this person do? Are they like a coach? Are, you know, as a talent person, are they like helping us just get connected to retained firms? Do they have those relationships? But now it's like, well, what are the points that you put on the board? How many hires did you make? I'm seeing that more and more, you know, with firms. They're actually talking about the amount of hires. And you know, I'm proud of the numbers that we put together. I measure my role from a you know, how many number of full lifecycle hires am I making? And mm-hmm. then overall, what's the percentage of open roles across the portfolio that I'm supporting? Historically, you know, I've been with the firm since the beginning. I've supported over 60% of all open headcount in the portfolio. And so, you know, that's really important when it comes to the discussion of, you know, we're bringing on a new company, we're hoping to onboard them. And it's really, really competitive for us to win this deal. Like, how can we leverage the platform team to get them on board?
Yeah, and I'd love to ask you a question around that. So how do you market then? How do you market your capabilities? I was asking this to Oliver, I believe, from InMotion Ventures. And what he mentioned is, Mash, you don't market to them after you invest, you market to them before. And if you're not doing that, there's something wrong, right? So my question to you, Richard, is being an operating partner and being involved with the fund, as well as with the portfolio companies, how are you marketing your platform capabilities to the founders? Like, how do you know if you can even help? And the same goes with LPs. How do you showcase your recruiting and or platform capabilities to LPs to attract them as you raise your fund?
Well, first, we come on great podcasts with great podcast hosts. That's, you know, some try.
There we go.
We don't do a ton of marketing, as you probably saw. We have some writing out there. It's something that we believe that reputation probably matters more than, you know, kind of what we put out there. We've really leaned into the founders that we work with, and they've been really helpful with things that we need, such as deal flow, talking to prospective LPs. So we kind of let that work speak for itself. But when I'm working with, I'll use the two examples that you have, like with when it's an LP and when it's a founder. So when I'm talking to an LP who's considering making an investment in Gutter, I'm usually walking them through the key metrics of what I've done historically and walking them through some case studies as well. So we look at actually specific companies of this is what happened, you know, when I started with them, and, you know, this is where they are a few years later. And then as it relates to like when I'm speaking with a founder who's considering taking on Gutter Investments, I will share with them explicitly what our work will look like. So I actually walk them through. Usually my onboarding deck and my Gutter talent sales deck are one and the same. You know, this is what to expect. This is how I'm held accountable. And this is what you can expect from me from working together. And usually that means I'm going to be there every step of the way, your first few hires. It means I'm going to be there for you 24/7. Seriously. Mm-hmm. To be there for issues that you have. I'm going to help you get connected to other Gutter founders and experts. And so those are the things that they can expect. And those are the things that I'm usually kind of sharing with them upfront when we're talking.
And the fact that you are able to hire across the spectrum levels, as well as, you know, industries, I think that's a massive win for early stage companies, because let's be real, a lot of times you don't really know who you need. You don't really have a detailed and specific job description. It's quite literally almost a 50% generalist, 50% specialist role. And I think having someone like you who's worked in venture, obviously before, but have also worked with individual companies and are meeting 300 to 400 people a year, it's such a super capability to have at the fund. I think when you and I were speaking last time, you also mentioned that your fund one Gutter companies graduate at 2x the industry average. Like, that was insane as well. And I think if I was an LP, I'd be like, damn, Richard, when are you raising your next fund? You know, because that's a hyper impressive metric too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, you know, we're very transparent with our LPs, very transparent with our founders, very direct. Those are certainly things we prefer to be known for. And I think we live and breathe that every day. You know, just to give you an example of what's on my plate right now, like I have five roles, like three of them are engineers, two of them are intermediate, one senior. I have a first customer success manager hire and a first account executive hire. So those are hard. Those are not easy roles. And for the founders with the go-to-market roles, it's the first time they're hiring for that function for the business. So working with a very blank canvas to put together criteria list and process, interview plan, and then frankly candidates is a really interesting thing, and a thing that I, you know, work to make progress on a day in and day out basis. I'm a big believer, you know, you share that I'm meeting with 300, 400 people a year. And I'm a big believer my whole career in it's not, you know, who you know, but it's who you get to know. I think, you know, Mash, you're like a great example of this is you're, you know, getting out and doing this podcast and getting to know great people in the platform space. You know, it's a small world out there, and, you know, continuing to refine the muscle of like reaching out to people and having conversations. And, you know, I think a lot of VC firms will flex the networks and like, we know all the best people. And I'm usually not selling that. I'm selling more, you know, I'm telling more like, I'm going to like look up under every rock. I'm going to like leave no page unturned.
And when we spoke last time, Richard, you mentioned that you did a survey of some sort for your portfolio companies. And I think around one third of them found talent to be like life-changing or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've been at this for about 2.5 years. And earlier this year, we decided, well, we think we're doing all this great work on the platform side. And I do need to shout out Dan and James, who are, we're the platform team, we're the whole team. And the level of support that they give the companies is unparalleled. It's motivating. And we are in lockstep. I'm working with both of them, usually on the deals that they led. But they are right in there with me. Absolutely. So I do want to shout them out. So as we were thinking about, you know, we spend a ton of time. These are the problems that keep us up at night. We care a ton. So we wanted to, you know, see how we were doing from an anonymous survey standpoint. And we did it earlier this year. And, you know, we actually like went through and looked at all of the projects that we've done for the portfolio companies, each one. And we actually like sent it to them individually. And then we asked them anonymous survey questions like, what was high impact? What was no impact? What feedback would you give us? How's talent going? How are fundraising? What have you thought of our customer introductions? What have you thought of the PR marketing support we've given you? We offer a lot for three people. What do you think about the strategic advice? And it was awesome to see the feedback that came back from founders, especially when it's anonymous, and to see people resoundingly give us, you know, great stuff. As you shared, like, you know, over a third of the founders not only found it like the talent program really good, but like trajectory changing, which is exactly where we want to be. And then, you know, probably another 30 to 40% found it to be high impact. So that's really good. And I think there's always room to improve. We got some feedback of other platform capabilities that our founders would love to see a little bit more support on, and we're making adjustments in order to do that. You know, in one case, you know, it came up that founders wanted to see more from customer introductions from us. And, you know, when we get feedback, we're on it. And, you know, even in the last quarter, I think Dan personally has probably made, you know, 30 customer introductions. He's got quite the Rolodex, and he just is a great relationship builder. And so the survey was really helpful. We also got just some really nice comments. You know, we don't know who they're from, but, you know, I think people appreciate that we're also building alongside them. And I think, you know, for the Gutter community, it's certainly not just, you know, investor on high. We are all in this together. And, you know, I think our founders feel that. We're one piece of feedback that we got was, you know, our Gutter people appreciated that Gutter was like cheering for them. Like when the moments were right, that we were just like this really positive force in order to like help them keep going. That was important. And we're willing to give like the real feedback. It's not just cheerleading. It's, it's the hard conversations as well. And we have them every single day. and that's, you know, the cheering is that's more impactful when you are having those hard conversations. One of the founders told me that the Gutter talent program is their ride or die. And I that will always stick with me as like, okay, that's how I want our founders to feel. You know, they have like other investors, they're a little bit later stage now. And like the other, you know, talent partner was just like, you know, they just weren't in there with the founder. So ride or die is a good spot to be.
100%. And when I was speaking with Amir, I asked him that, well, you're at Gutter, you know, is it only talent that they offer? Like, what are their pillars of platform from your perspective as a portfolio company? And he said, Mesh, look, tomorrow if I went to Dan or James, if I asked for a favor, they're not going to turn me away. You know, they're gonna work with me and they're gonna help me out. And he gave me a very specific example where it was extremely obvious where the moment your team stepped in at Gutter, something that their team's been trying to figure out for X amount of days got shortened by, let's say, 10x, right? Wow. And I found that to be very impressive. Yeah.
And
we just spent literally the last 7 minutes just complimenting your team at Gutter. Oh, I was like, gosh. Okay, Amir, that's enough. I gotta go.
Yeah.
But it was beautiful, right?
We'll have to get Dan and James on in the future too, like showing how like the investor does platform or something, because it's just, if there's anything to take away from my talent experience, one thing to take away is I'm pretty good at working with people smarter than me. You know, if you look at my partner, so that's, I'm good at that.
That's funny. And one other element that I wanted to dig into, Richard, is keeping track. So today you have, I believe 15 portfolio companies. How do you keep track of their needs? How do you anticipate their needs without essentially, I don't know, spamming them with emails every day? That's how I like to phrase it. When I spoke with Oliver from InMotion Ventures, he mentioned that once a week, he sits down with his own team, his own fund team, once a week or once every 2 weeks, to talk about, hey, what are you guys seeing? I'm on the platform side, but what are you guys seeing on the fund side? Are there any founders who are saying X or Y? If so, let me know so maybe I can work with them to figure that out, right? I spoke with Daniela Pico from Forum Ventures. They have 380 portfolio companies. What? Right? And I asked him, I'm like, well, Danny, you have a six person portfolio platform team. You have 380 companies. Like, help me understand how you're doing this. He's like, well, Mash, you know, we're still figuring things out, but sure, we have an NPS score of 100. I'm like, okay, insane. So what they do at Forum Ventures, being at NPS score 100, is they leverage a tool to send quarterly emails, and the emails essentially go out 4 times a year, every 3 months, to their portfolio companies. And they're able to get a snapshot of their metrics, what they need, et cetera. And if after receiving those feedback forms back or those emails back, if the Forum Ventures team feels like a subsequent conversation may be beneficial, then they go ahead and have that conversation with that team to really further their interests, right? So in your case, 15 portfolio companies at Gutter, how are you keeping in touch, or rather, how are you keeping track of their needs, and how are you anticipating what they'll need 3 or 4 months down the line, Richard? Yeah.
A difference with Gutter is we're all operators. Dan's an operator. James started a business earlier in his career. I've been at this for 15 years. So that's really helpful experience. Especially we work with founders. Another difference with Gutter is we will work with founders that haven't been in a venture-backed company before. And that's unique because, you know, we're trying to back founders solving some of the most critical problems facing the world. And we look for founders coming to us with the insight. And that might not necessarily be someone coming from, you know, DoorDash, frankly. You know, it just might not be that person. It could be, but it might not be. So, you know, we've backed founders, you know, I think of like Rachel Nemeth, who's at Opus. She worked at Danny Meyer. She worked at Union Square Hospitality with Danny Meyer for years. We backed a B2B SaaS waste management company called Watts. And both of those founders, Laura and Meredith, incredible experts in waste management. But this is their first rodeo in software B2B SaaS. So that is helpful that we have seen the movie before in some cases. And then we probably have an advantage of, you know, we lead all of our deals. We are, you know, as lead investors, we're working with from pre-seed to Series A. So we have a window of 2 years, and we've now had companies that have gone through that journey. So for us, it's a little bit, from a numbers perspective, we can wrap our arms around that without a ton of coordinating or, you know, formal process. Dan and James, with every investment that they make, they meet with them weekly or biweekly. It's very tight. When I'm working on a search, I'm meeting with the founders every day. Sorry, I'm meeting with the founders every week if we're working on a search, but sometimes communicating every day. We're in the office together. So we have some competitive advantages for the way that we work with our founders. That is just very close. If a hire were made at a company that we didn't know about, it would be shocking because we just are there. You know, if we had a surprise on an investor update, you know, founders will send investor updates, you know, monthly and then board meetings quarterly. If we saw a surprise in there, that would be shocking.
One question I had for you, Richard, was from Carly from Convoy Ventures. She was asking how you budget for platform teams, right? So let's say if there's a startup that's figuring out or just really starting their platform capabilities from scratch, and or they're thinking of scaling one of their current existing platform capabilities, how should they think about budgeting? Because it's not just the financial side, but there's also resources, time, et cetera. Can you give us some tips around that? Would really appreciate some advice there.
Sure. Part of, you know, joining Gutter was there was not an operating partner role posted anywhere. You know, I had been doing the search work with some of the companies. The first fund had come together. And from my conversations with Dan and James about the companies that we were backing, I stayed up late one night and actually wrote a letter to both of them. I think it was like 4 or 5 pages, diatribe of why I wanted to join Gutter. And I brought it in the next day and we talked about it. And I thought of it very much in simple terms of this is the size of the fund. And, you know, this is what the results need to be. The customer is the founder, but there are some real constraints about the way that a venture firm operates with the fees that it collects based on the size of fund. So the way that a scaling startup operates, you know, if you have a great quarter, your budget can change quickly. You know, if you raise a Series B, you know, your next 9 months as a company are going to look very different. And I think as it relates to budgeting for a platform team, you do have to get ready for a few years of consistency of what you have, because especially on, you know, well-documented, it's not the sunniest of times for venture firms raising funds. You know, I think a lot of targets that have been out there haven't been hit, from like mega funds to, you know, early emerging manager funds, which we would fall into. So you have to be, you know, very pragmatic. There's only, you know, you probably won't have a ton to operate with on an annual basis. I should also mention, we don't charge for my services. So there are some platform capabilities that firms will have where the portfolio company pays, you know, an additional as for the service. Our companies do not pay. So you can get creative, but, you know, you have to think within the constraints. When I tell people about the business model of venture, the way that it works, they're often surprised because it's a very long time horizon and it really doesn't change that often. So as you think about your budget, don't expect to have it change very, very frequently.
I've also gotten the advice from previous platform leads or heads of platform, Richard, where they mentioned that you need to really be honest with yourselves as the fund. What is my core offering? Because you can't be everywhere all the time and be a jack of all trades. You need to really zero in on what it is that I can offer my portfolio companies. And if I can't offer, I can only offer A, but not B or C, that's okay. But then you need to build your team and your expectations of your portfolio companies around that one offering. And maybe someone else on their cap table can help with B or C, and that's okay. Or maybe you can make an introduction to someone at fund A or startup B who can help with those B and C points, but it's you need to specialize and if possible, really figure out that one good offering, right? And that helps with the budgeting piece as well.
Yeah, because imagine being the founder that, you know, they get sold on something that they don't end up getting, you know, later on, where they're like, oh, I'm going to get marketing help. I'm going to get sales help. I'm going to get recruiting help. And then when the role comes up, you know, a venture firm might just like send them like 4 people and they say, good luck. But that's not how recruiting happens.
And one of your metrics, one of your OKRs was also critical hires made full life cycle, right? And that's another thing I admire about your team is that you're not just, hey, here's someone I know, let me know how it goes. It's more like, look, here's my top of funnel, but these people are pretty, pretty tailored for your role. Let's see how this plays out. And you're there with them throughout the whole journey, not just getting the right person through the door, but also seeing that person at the company evolve. And that goes back to the chart, right? I think it was time versus interest and also excitement. Or
yeah.
At least that's how I recall.
Yeah, yeah, that's
right. Wanted to be top end to the right. Yeah, that's beautiful.
And building the process. You know, if you're a founder and you come to me and you say, I've never hired product design before, what do I do? That's a daunting task. And I work with them to get connected to other product designers that I think are really great so that they can understand mm-hmm. what good looks like and get their perspective on what to look for. We come up with a scorecard. Maybe we bring one of those experts in to interview, but we also put together a process to really help the founder be empowered to make a decision. And that's, you know, and then I'm also finding the designers who might be interested. That's a unique angle to platform because it's like a fractional recruiter. It's a fractional amount of talent.
You know, I love the word fractional, man. Don't taunt me like that. And what one thing I wanted to ask you, like, really, is what's the best piece of advice you've personally gotten around VC platform, and what's the worst?
The best piece of advice I received actually wasn't a personal. It was from listening to podcasts. Like, podcasts are great. And I was listening to an interview with Frank Slootman, and the advice is don't check boxes. And his, you know, what he was saying is that VCs are bad at identifying talent because all they do is check boxes. And that resonated with me as someone who likes getting involved with process, likes building out a scorecard and competencies, and thinks about transferable skills and creating opportunities. So that resonated. The worst piece of advice is to just spend time with your winners.
That's pretty funny. That's actually pretty
I don't know hilarious. I don't know what that means. I don't know what winners, but I don't know what that means. So that's bad advice.
And so at Gutter, if I were to summarize, your team offers, you know, customer introductions, fundraising introductions, critical introductions that are, you know, essential for the founder or the startup to reach their next milestone, et cetera. And also just the founder network that you have. And finally, the talent that you and I have been speaking about for the last hour. So bearing all that in mind and focusing on the talent piece, if there is an early stage founder listening to this pod, and, you know, let's say they're under $5 million in annual revenue, well, is that really early stage? But what advice would you give them? Because they're, for the founder specifically, they might not really know, if they're technical, they might not know what a head of marketing looks like, yet they want to be involved in it. They want to understand if this person's the right fit for the company. So it's kind of tough, right? So what advice would you give them, Richard, given your 15 years of experience?
Yeah, I give it, and I get this question a lot, and it's very common. So I'll give a few pieces of advice. I would say the first one is to adopt top grading interview into your process. And what a top grading interview is it's the unsexy process of going from bottom to top on a resume and asking the same few questions about what someone did, why someone left, who they reported to an organization to get a sense of their career progression. And I could say if you did that with five people, you know, you would probably weed out at least two just from that process. So I would say adopting top grading is important. I would say to have structure around the process. It is so important to think about the competencies that you need for the role and then building a process that helps assess that. I think like also asking yourself, like, why does someone want this job is really important to really think about the candidate from their perspective as you open the role. And then I guess like one quick, like, I think piece of advice would be like to get ready to spend 20% of your time on that open role. That's really tactical, but recruiting takes time and getting out there in front of people is really important. So those would be, I think, like the big areas. And then if you need to tap like an expert in the space, like don't be afraid to ask them for help.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you that, right? Because a lot of times, so there's two elements to this. One, you may just not be the right person to be hiring this person. You could be 20%, but you probably need somebody who has developed a better way to read people. At least that's how I see it. So one question I want to ask you, Richard, is how have you developed that skill set of being able to read a person and figure out if that person genuinely wants this role? Because we hear of smart founders all the time, very smart founders hiring the wrong people simply because the applicant faked through the process. And if someone's lying to your face, you can't really detect that all the time.
Yeah.
So how have you developed that muscle of figuring out if a person's going to be a fit, not just for their professional side, but also because of their personality and their character? What's the secret sauce there,
Richard? Yeah, I think I listen. I really, truly listen to people and to their stories of what they want next as well. When I'm kicking off, you know, let's say it's a VP of Eng role and it's for an early stage company, you know, there might be opinions up front that you should get someone who, you know, hasn't been a VP before, but wants to grow into it. Or maybe you want to get someone who's very senior who wants to go early again. I usually kick off both. I'm like very agnostic, and I want to like talk to people of where they are in their lives, because it's not necessarily about the person. It could be about the person and where they are career wise, and it might just be the right time. So listening is an important, you know, capability that you bring to that. And then, you know, knowing when to drop an opinion and to hold them back is also important. One quick story on this, you know, relates to, I was working with a founder who was hiring for a role. And when he offered the position, the candidate was, you know, a little, thank you. Like, thanks for the offer, but they weren't like jumping out of their seat. Hell yeah. And the second place person would have totally been the hell yeah. Like, I want to do this. They had this great connection. But the person we had offered the job to did better, just did better in the process. We had an objective process. There was an assignment, the whole thing. And, you know, the founder called me and said, like, oh my gosh, what should I do? Like, this person, you know, wasn't as jazzed as I hoped they would be. And, you know, I've worked with the founder to help, you know, maybe like drop that opinion a little bit, because like, let's like let this marinate, like let's give it time to see how that person reacts. And the person ended up accepting a few days later. Their style was just a little bit more ruminative, you know, thinking, you know, needed to discern. And that person has been an excellent, you know, contributor to that team. And, you know, so I think like having too many opinions can be really problematic. And so, you know, building process, listening to people, you know, constantly beating the drum to find folks, and then, you know, holding opinions, you know, I think is important. The one thing that I would maybe push back on for what you had shared, like ultimately the founder does have to be the person who's responsible for the hire. So if it's product design, they don't have product design skill set, they're not sitting on the bench and just letting a product designer decide who the person's going to be. They ultimately have to be that person. They can use another head of design to help inform them, but I ultimately am working with our founders to be, there's always an RP, there's always a responsible party for the hire. And it's actually not me. I'm responsible for a lot of things in the process, but I'm actually empowering with getting the right data and the right information for our founders to make the right decisions, because they have to be decisive.
Yeah, that's a great reminder for myself, Richard. Thank you for keeping me honest there. Yeah, yeah, it's you know, it's extremely impressive how you've developed out your career and how you now support founders at Gutter. I guess the last question I have for you today is, as you look into the future, what does platform look like at Gutter? You know, what are some things that you want to 10x from here? Everyone's saying good things, but there's always things to improve upon. So I'm curious what version 2 looks like for Gutter.
I would say we're certainly not satisfied, and we have higher aspirations for what we want this firm to be. And I think we have a great foundation for what these last 2.5 years have been. There's internal discussions happening with Dan, James, and myself of where do we want to double down? Maybe it's more on recruiting. Maybe I, you know, add to this team. Maybe there's another operating partner that joins who happens to be in a different function, such as marketing. So we'll see what the future holds, but, you know, there's just going to be a lot of consistency from the work that we've done so far and, you know, continuing to refine that value prop. You know, I've made over like 50 full life cycle hires in this time. And, you know, there's improvements to be made even on that front. So very focused on the day-to-day of helping our teams grow. And bringing on the best people.
Beautiful. It's rhyming what you're saying with what Danny from Forum Ventures told me, is that as they look into the future, the one thing they'll never compromise on is the quality and the intensity of the work that they do with their founders. So the question becomes, how can we scale our portfolio, yet keep the quality consistent while keeping a lean team, right? I'm paraphrasing, but that's what it sounded like.
It makes sense. And sorry, just to share, is like we have a, we've had the advantage of having a steady stream of investments, and it's been really a help, and graduations, which means Series A. So it's been a pretty healthy order of things in the way that we operate.
Amazing. Richard, this was so fun to do.
So fun.
Time just flew by. I am left with so much to think about. And there's just, this is a very in-depth discussion that we did on talent, and it's one of the first that I had on this topic. So I'm nothing but extremely impressed and extremely grateful for your time. Yeah. But before I let you go, I do have to ask you a question. I do have some rapid round questions. Can I throw them at you?
Throw them fast. Let's do it.
Let's do this. All right. Favorite pizza topping. What is it?
Topping mushrooms. This is a new find. Lucia Pizza on Canal Street. Mash, next time you're in New York, I'm going to buy you a slice.
Let's do this. I want the whole pie, man. What are you talking about, Spice? I want the whole pie.
Yeah. Let's do it. It's so good. I'm more of a traditional pizza person, but this mushroom pie is fantastic.
Mushroom pie. Let's do it. If you could pick one superpower, what would it be?
Ability to run as fast as Usain Bolt.
Ability to run?
As fast as Usain Bolt.
You know, I get it. But like, why not just teleport? Why you got to run?
Running would actually be, I think running is extremely enjoyable. So to be able to go that fast, you know, teleporting, I'm sure that gets old after a while.
Teleporting gets old after a while. What is up
it's
with you, man?
It's got it.
Okay. If your life was a movie, what genre would it be?
I'd say rom-com. My wife and I still laugh a lot.
That's amazing. Interesting. I think mine, I always go for bit of mystery. I feel like a bit of mystery keeps you on your toes, you know? Yeah, but nothing too bad. Like no supernatural stuff.
I was going to say like James Bond for you.
Every time I'm on a plane, I watch James Bond movies. Richard, I don't know how you picked up on that. I just feel so connected to him. I don't know why. Like I feel like he goes through life and stuff just comes his way, but he keeps a straight face and he moves on, right? Now. And anyway, I don't know why I went into so much detail there. Favorite movie?
Gladiator.
Never watched it.
Oh.
But I've heard a lot about it. Is it just exactly what it sounds like?
It is. It's an epic. Highly recommend.
You know what? I'll take that recommendation very seriously. Just like I took the recommendation of avocado as a pizza topping once from one of our guests, and I still haven't tried it, but don't tell her. Okay. And what's your go-to comfort food?
Taco Bell.
Yo, same.
Nice.
Right? Like a lot of people don't like it, but I'm like, man, it's fairly priced. If you take it from the right shop, they prepare it with a little bit of kindness, so it's not super rushed.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can have three or four of those and you're pretty much full for the next 2-3 hours. And don't forget the hot sauce. So I think when I'm in New York, man, we got to do a Taco Bell and pizza run. 100%.
Oh my gosh, I'm in. And I'm not even like clarifying which day, because I'm down for any day for that.
There we go. Richard, this was so fun. I enjoyed every minute.
Thanks,
I spent the whole morning preparing, and I am so happy I did, because this was beautiful. I enjoyed it so much.
Thank you for your questions. They were so thoughtful. Appreciate what you're doing for the platform community, and really enjoyed being on. So thank you for your time.
Wasn't that just amazing? I don't even know how else to compliment this man. Like, it was such a fun episode. The conversation just kept flowing. I loved every minute. I wish I could go back. If you want to hear more from Richard, I'll put his link in the show notes below. Reach out to him on LinkedIn. Tell him you found him on the pod. You know, that way I get some brownie points. And if you're listening to this over audio, why don't you come on over to YouTube and actually watch Richard talk? It's more fun that way. Go to YouTube, type in Hire CMO Pod. That's HIRECMO pod. And look for episode number 10 with Richard. And I'll see you on the next one.